Thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again to Riding Right with the Raiders. I'm your host, Kevin Allen, and with my co-host,
Caleb Jensen.
Today we have a very special guest, but as always, God bless America and God bless Texas. Tonight's guest isn't just talking about defending Texas. He's lived it. Navy veteran, bold conservative, and candidate for lieutenant governor, Timothy Mabrie joins us now to talk about land rights, faith, sovereignty, and exposing the swamp in Austin.
Kevin, Caleb, thank you very much for having me on your podcast. It is an honor to be with individuals who care as much about Texas and are passionate about our future as I am.
Thank you. We loved getting you on here. We're honored that you gave us some of your time. It's very hard to get candidates' time, especially as we're ramping up into the campaign season. So we're just glad to have an hour of your time.
Well, Kevin and Caleb, one thing that I've seen in most politics in general is that most candidates go for the big, the flashy, and they forget about the backbone of society, those who really make a difference. And for me, that's one thing I want to bring to the table is being different, is to give a voice to the people who are just starting out, who are passionate, who truly care, and not just about the big donors, because truly that's where I see a lot of it going wrong, is it's all about the powerful, all about the money, but not about the people.
That's very grassroots and conservative. I love it. Why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners, because there's going to be a lot of new listeners tuning in with us, who you are and a little bit about yourself and how you got involved and why.
That's a great question. For all of y'all who don't know, my name is Timothy Mabrie. I'm a Navy veteran, former fire officer, and a proud sixth generation Texan. I've spent my life standing up for those without a voice. I've served aboard the USS Arleigh Burke, DDG 51, and was honorably discharged after I stood up against some illegal activity that was happening to me and my other shipmates on board. And I got out of that. I joined the fire department. I became a lieutenant and I was working up the ranks. If I would have stayed in, I would have been either a captain or a battalion chief right now. And now I'm a husband, a father of two beautiful kids. My oldest, we just celebrated her third birthday 2 days ago. And now here I am with two kids under two. I'm running for lieutenant governor of Texas, not because I want to, but because I have to and I've been called to. I personally believe in God the Father and being the ultimate being and creator for us. And over the past several years, through my journey, I've been shown and told I was going to get into politics, that one day it was going to happen. And this year, January 7th of this year, at a church that we had just started going to, I get called out on stage by the pastor's wife. And I'll be honest, I didn't answer the call at first, because she said there's someone in this room who is hearing from God and they're called and they need to come up on stage. And I was like, I know that's me, but no, it can't be yet. And then she repeated the call. And when the second time she repeated the call, my body started fully trembling. Like we read in the Bible, like, a full awe and trembling. And that's what I was experiencing. I wasn't afraid. I didn't know what was going on. My body just started trembling. And then the third time, the pastor's wife said, this person needs to get up here. You're afraid. You're concerned. And you don't feel worthy. And then she pointed at me and said, get up on stage. So I got up on stage at this church and she said, you are hearing from God. It is correct. You are called to be a shepherd of his people. And the time is now. And I'm like, okay, we'll see how this goes. 2 days later, I wake up from a vision where this glowing figure, and I believe it to be Jesus, but it was hard to see the face because of how bright the light was, had his hand on my shoulder and was showing me things to come. And when I woke up, there were specific instructions. Part of it was, okay, I was called to be the lieutenant governor, and to mention a specific name to a friend to show it, like, hey, this is the authority, like this is coming from him. And then it was finally, have I finally showed you enough, my son, for you to trust me? And being a Christian, those words hurt to hear, my gosh, I've been questioning this. And then I just said, okay, God, if this is what you want me to do, you're going to open up doors and you're going to move in a way that only you can. And since that time, the doors have opened and I'm here having a conversation with you, Caleb, and Kevin. So just to tell you how fast God moves, this is all for him. So I'm not doing this because I want to. I'm doing it because I'm called to be a shepherd and called to stand up in the gap for the people who have been forgotten about.
That's very powerful. And I really appreciate you having the courage to come forward with that testimony to start us off like that. You know, I put God first in all of my legislation. I don't think I've ever shown you it, but we have talked for a while. There's such a calling when you talk about serving and getting into politics, especially when you're called to serve, to help people. You know, politics is a dirty business, and you've got to have, in my opinion, you've got to have that Christ-centered foundation. Or I honestly, in my opinion, if you don't have that foundation, you're setting yourself up for a very long and hard fall if you're getting into politics. We've talked a little bit and gone back and forth, kind of me talking to you, getting to know your campaign a bit. So I want to dive into abolishing property taxes and restoring land ownership here in Texas. That is a hot ticket item right now. And with that, you deal with liberty, ownership, overreach. And in Texas, a lot of times we've heard Texans don't really own their land as long as property taxes exist. Can you explain what real ownership means to you?
Yeah, real ownership means the government can't come into your house, tells you what you can and cannot do, and have to pay them a tax. Because right now we have the appraisal districts, and out of there, we have all these taxes. We have taxes for roads, emergency services. The biggest one is school. But we're paying all these taxes, and most of the time we're not getting a benefit out of them. And if we don't pay it, they can seize your property. Or better yet, what some people can do is you can have individuals, like companies, go and buy the bonds that are created when you don't pay your property taxes, and then they can lien that against you. So if you owe, let's say, $3,000 in property tax, you as an individual or corporation can come in, buy that lien, and then confront the property owner and say, hey, you owe back taxes. Now we're going to hold you to it. Either you pay us back plus an interest, or we can seize your property. That is a backdoor way of theft. Because here in Texas, we are all about our land. We are all about our freedoms. Heck, we fought a war. We had our own revolution with Mexico about freedoms. And yet right now we're renting from the government, and you don't pay. Hey, guess what? They're going to seize your property. They're telling you what you can and cannot do. And that's on Texas. That's on American.
There's a lot of government officials that'll argue against that, saying property taxes are the price we pay for civilization here in America and in Texas. And I separate those two because Texas is so influential politically and such a powerhouse. What is your response to those who say eliminating taxes is radical?
Well, we need taxes, plain and simple. Some type of taxes we have to have. That's how governments make money. That's how we end up having to pay for infrastructure and military. So I understand taxation, but when you're, in essence, renting it from the government in perpetuity, there's a problem. To say, hey, I have farmland, I have this property that I own, and to continue to pay for it for the rest of your life, it is not truly yours. So what I'm proposing is a consumption tax. One of the studies that I found, it was saying a 7% consumption tax would eliminate the 60 plus taxes that we have, up and including some of the business payroll and other business taxes as well, and just have a flat out flat rate 7% consumption. Now, doing a little bit of a deeper dive into why and how we have the appraisal districts, I can see it being even more of an uphill fight. Like, I had a long conversation with someone the past week who was opening my eyes on the true way it works. And it's going to make it one hell of a fight. Because in essence, what the appraisal districts do is they use our property as collateral. So they use what we're going to pay them and our property as collateral as well, to where they get bonds. They take out these bonds, and that's how they're making money off of us, and they're able to pay for other projects. So we're getting used as collaterals of property. So that's a bit of a problem of they're making money off of our property, off of even on top of what we're paying them every year. And that's why we're renting it in perpetuity. So to get rid of that, it's going to be one hell of a fight. Because now you're telling people, hey, we're going to uproot how you've been doing things for quite a while. But it needs to be done.
You mentioned bonds there, and that's always a big issue here in West Texas. And I think probably most of Texas in general, that's we use bonds a lot for better or worse. They have a purpose, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And a lot of times what I call bloated bonds. With that, I'm curious, do you have any type of plan, or is there a way to make sure schools, roads, and public services are protected? If you were to implement this type of plan.
So in that type of plan, that 7% consumption tax would actually cover the school funding, the school and emergency services. That would cover all of that. Because the state would have its would have its 7% consumption, and the cities and local municipalities would still have their own on top of that. What we'd have to evaluate is that 7% still going to be good. And I say that because this legislative session, we saw a major increase in spending. So I don't know if it's still going to be that 7% is still going to be accurate, or we're going to need to go up it. Because in my opinion, the less taxes that we have to pay, the better. And we shouldn't be having mass excess every year. I understand an emergency fund, but to have a major gross overabundance that just sits there in an account, not a big fan of that.
Do you think that this is the kind of Liberty First reform the Texas GOP has been afraid or standoffish to tackle? And what do you think, if so, has been the main reason they haven't addressed it in its entirety?
The GOP intends well. But when you look at how the system is, the corruption, and how it's all based, it is extremely hard to fight. Because over the past 100 years, we've watched our liberties and freedoms been slowly eroded. Over 100 years ago, we didn't even have the IRS. We didn't have the type of taxation that we do today. It's all been put in the past 100 years. We used to have tariffs that paid for everything. But now our tariffs are upside down. Trump is fixing that. But yet we're now having that major burden on the average person. And it's designed to give more money to the powerful and to a certain group of people. And to fight against that is almost suicide. And as people have been silenced because of it. And that's where it becomes tricky. The average person, we want life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But when you start getting down into those rabbit holes, you start seeing some nastiness. Like we saw about Epstein. Epstein spoke up and he magically disappeared. A lot of things like that happen. So the people who are speaking up who want this, there's a very real threat on their lives because they're trying to fight against it. So the Republican Party means well. People are like, hey, yes, we want the liberty. We want this. But then when people start pulling back the dirtiness in the dark, they're like, oh my gosh, this can be kind of horrendous. So it's a fight, and we have to have the right people in place who are willing to stand up and fight and not be afraid. And they're not in it for the wrong reasons.
When you talk about that as a rabbit hole, I've always looked as like sticking your hand in like a honey badger's den. You're talking about ruffling some feathers of people that can make or break your entire career, put you out of house and home. And it's intimidating, you know? Even locally, it's intimidating for me to stand up to people knowing that, you know, if I come against them in a certain way, when money's involved, there's some people that won't play about that. And like it or not, you have to be conscientious. Hey, when there's a lot of money on the line, your life is probably on the line. And I think that intimidates a lot of people. So, what is your message to young Texans dreaming of home ownership but stuck in renting?
Never stop fighting, no matter what you're told. Don't believe everything that you read or that you're told. And we can end the property taxes. We can reverse the debt and all the problems that we're seeing. But the key, there's a key but, there's a fight to be had. Because right now, we're at a major disadvantage. We don't have the money, we don't have the resources, and we don't have the influence and the power. For generations or for decades now, we have been told to sit down, shut up, and get cast to the side. I was at an event a little over a month ago where I met Laura Trump. It was at the Republican GOP. They invited Laura to speak, and I was talking with another young individual. He was in his mid-20s, and we had a similar experience. Trying to go to Republican events, trying to get in, like, hey, we want to help, we want to be active. And we're told, you're young, sit down, shut up, let the adults handle this. I was like, excuse me? Y'all are making policies that affect me, that affect us. The policies that they're making right now in Austin and DC are affecting us, Kevin and Caleb. They affect us every single day. And most of them are out of touch. So to the young people, we are in it for a fight. There is a fight coming. And that the time is not tomorrow. The time is now, right here, right now, to start waking up, start questioning our elected officials and say, enough is enough, because we can't afford it much. Here's a fun example. In 2018, I bought my first house. I bought that house for $166,000. I sold that home a little over 2 years later for $215,000. Now, I put in some work to it, but that house sold again about a year or two ago, and it sold for about $275,000. So within a 6, 7 year period, that house went up in value by almost $100,000 within a couple of years. That's not sustainable. And we're seeing that across the board. My parents bought a home in, I think it was 1989. They bought for 30,000. The appraisal district now says it's worth 120,000. So within over 30 years, the house went from 30,000 to 120. It quadrupled. And the home prices are increasing while the wages aren't increasing that much. The inflation is out of hand. And eventually that bubble's going to pop. And we're seeing that again and again. So to the young people, to my generation, we have to fight. We have to say enough is enough and hold people accountable. And when they say, oh, it's easy, you can do it, prove it. Restart right now. Go out and prove it.
We're talking about fighting and standing up, and I've often argued that the Republican Party, especially the Young Party, we've got to step away from a lot of these bills that are only benefiting the elite and get back to our grassroots, the common man, the blue collar, the working man, the low income, people on disabilities like myself that have really fallen to the side. And we've gotten a situation where a lot of politicians, they've got so much money that they don't have to deal and see what the bottom end of a lot of these policies are and what it looks like for us down here. That's going to take us into our next topic, exposing legislative cronyism and the truth about SB3. Man, I've been following this one. This one's a hot topic. And before we go into this, I just want everyone to be very clear on this. Yourself recently, you were at the Alamo with a bunch of other veterans, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, just so everybody knows? Because I've talked about it here, and then people are looking at me like, what? I haven't heard this, and I want them to hear it.
Yeah, there's been a lot of misinformation about that. So Wednesday the 11th, I received a message from a couple of individuals saying, hey, there's a very real incredible threat on the Alamo. And being in I live just north of San Antonio, like 45 minutes north. I grew up in San Antonio. So I got this message like, hey, there's a very real threat on the Alamo. There's a group calling to occupy and destroy and take back the Alamo. I was like, that's a little bit weird. I was up in Angelina County or Lufkin, Texas when this happened. And we broke off a little early. We hauled butt down here, back home. I made sure my kids were safe. My family was fed. And I got my level 3+ vest, a pistol. I took off the rifle magazines and one of the extra ammo pouches because I just want to have a medical and a pistol. Because for me, I realize it may not be the best thing for me personally to have a rifle in that situation. Also, my thinking was if things were to pop off, there'd be a good chance that I would be able to get a weapon from somebody else, like a rifle. So I wasn't too concerned about that part. But on my way there, I reached out to a friend who he was very in touch with a lot of law enforcement agencies statewide and federally. I called them up and was like, hey, is this a real incredible threat? Like, before I get too far down the road, is this a real credible threat? And he said, yes. Word through the grapevine in the intel world is there is a direct threat on the Alamo and something might get frosty. What we didn't realize and what people don't understand is that there were individuals who were former CIA and special services, like, who were standing by. They weren't at location. There were teams of people ready to go in case something went down. But there was about 20 Texans and I who showed up to the Alamo to defend it that night. I got proof on my Facebook of myself with the pistol and that vest at the Alamo. So we didn't just talk it, we showed up. And that was Wednesday, June 11th, 2025. And the next day, the next Thursday, so the day later, our Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, had the audacity to go on the news, on Fox News, and say, it wasn't Texans defending the Alamo, it was DPS, SAPD, and the Guard. That's who was defending. That was his words. And it's like, excuse me, there was 20 of us who were out there with DPS, with the National Guard, with SAPD, to protect and defend that Alamo. And stuff did get a little squirrely that Wednesday. It was not an entirely peaceful protest. There was fighting that happened. Two people who were Republicans got attacked. They had a Trump flag and they got attacked. They got ripped away from them. They were getting beaten up. I went for the flag and I got knocked to the ground. And it took one of the other individuals who was with our group to get in between the protesters who were assaulting people to say, I have a gun. Get back, get back, get back, before they backed off. And then they had a call for SAPD and the DPS. They had a call for backup. And when they were calling for backup, then the police started to get assaulted. That's when the troopers with the riot gear had to show up. Like, they came in and pushed everything away. But that did not get reported on the news. I was live on TikTok when... Actually, that day was Facebook. I was live on Facebook that day when this occurred. But again, none of it was mentioned. And something really weird happened on the Saturday the 14th with the No Kings rally. There was a U.S. Post Office and Federal Building, like U.S. Post Office and Courthouse, next to the Alamo. again, we were out there for that protest just in case things got a little weird. Because when the sun is up, nothing strange happens, obviously. But when the sun goes down, that's when the crazy people pop up. So right before sundown, we were over by the Alamo and this courthouse, post office and courthouse. And there was two federal police officers. They were there. This work truck shows up, talks to the officers, then they go to the building. And at first we thought they were screwing it, like screwing in the boards. Like they had to board it up completely, front door and windows. So at first we saw them and I started recording on my phone and that we thought they were screwing it in. Then we quickly realized, no, they were pulling the screws out. Like that doesn't seem right. About the same time, San Antonio Police Chief William McManus shows up, starts shaking the hands of DPS. He sees two protesters and he goes and shakes their hands, talks with them. And then I make direct eye contact with him and I start walking towards the police chief. Now, this time on the 14th, I didn't have my vest on. I still had the pistol on my hip, but I didn't have the vest. And I walk towards him. He looks at me, just does a little bit of a head nod, but quickly gets into his vehicle. He didn't want to talk with us. He didn't want to talk to the veterans, the ones being there. He wanted to talk to protesters. And this was all going on about the same time that they were deboarding the building. But those of us in the group, we just looked at each other and said, something doesn't feel right with this. Because some of those, there was a couple of people around that courthouse and post office who were looking at their phones. They were looking up at us, making like on the phone, like texting or calling, and then just looking up at us and looking away when we made eye contact with them. We're like, something doesn't feel right. So we walked away. We walked around the block, still inside of the Alamo, but we could see a main street. Like, so in case something weird was going to happen, we could still see down it. Few minutes pass, and we start seeing a helicopter get closer, and it looks like they're peering into buildings. And then we start hearing chanting, and we walked back down, and we see that these protesters surround that spot where they were at the Wednesday the 11th, in the exact spot where they had just deboarded part of the building, like the front door. I'm like, that's weird. This is not just a coincidence. But again, most of us didn't get mentioned. We stood to the side and watched as people yelled. We saw instigators getting into people's faces and yelling at them, trying to start a fight. And we also watched them follow the media around. Like Fox News showed up, was starting to record. And the moment that they showed up, the protesters started chanting and yelling, and they were being followed around. So as the media would turn the camera off, they would stop, but they would also follow the news anchor and the camera around everywhere they went. So much so that they actually got scared and they were terrified. But the news did not report that. All they said was it was a peaceful protest. There was no assault. Nothing bad had happened on either of those days. But it's not true.
That is so odd. Like, was there a reason that that was even boarded up to begin with? Was it because of the Alamo threats or was it something else?
I don't know. It might have been that, but there were several buildings close to the Alamo and in downtown that were boarded up. But I don't know exactly why it was boarded. So it was boarded up on that Wednesday, except the door. On that Wednesday, the door wasn't boarded, but the Saturday it was, and then they removed it. The question I have to ask myself in the audience, why would a federal agency with protests going on remove the boards from a building that they had secured? And then minutes later, people show up to protest and were getting angry.
That's just bizarre. to me. I know coincidences happen, but those two type of coincidences colliding like that is very odd.
In my opinion, it kind of sounds like a publicity scandal.
Kind of, yeah, exactly.
Like somebody paid those protesters to follow around the news, and whenever they figured out that they were taking down the boards, they just magically showed up and said, oh, these are down? We're going to stay here a while.
And it very well could have been. You know, we've, even in Lubbock, and I love how many news channels we have, but a lot of times you get, I call it cherry-picked news, if that makes sense, where you're seeing parts of stuff that happened. Did this happen? Yeah, but it's not the real story, and there's a lot more to it than what's been said. But to have it to that degree is very odd, because generally, I've never really seen or noticed federal agencies getting involved in doing something like that. They've usually got better stuff to do, and usually it's somebody from the city that'll get sent to do that.
It kind of reminds me of what happened a few days ago with the Tech Police and what happened over at the Jones.
What was that about?
Apparently, there was a vehicle sitting in the parking lot of the Jones, just kind of sitting there, and Tech Police got word of it, so they went and checked it out, and turns out there was a dude with a gun in there. He got out as soon as the cops pulled up and shot the cops and ended up dead because of the cops. But what was crazy is nobody gave the full story.
Huh. I heard about it, but I haven't really followed it. And that's weird because that's the same parking lot that we had the 20 break-ins within that 1 week, and Texas Tech was like, you know, they don't have money for cameras to be put up everywhere. And then Tech Police was like, well, the campus is too big for us to police it. So I really, that makes me question a little bit. How did they find out? Because, my God, how did they know that there was a man in a car with a gun, but they didn't know anything about 20 break-ins that happened in the same week?
They just knew that there was a suspicious vehicle sitting in a parking lot.
That's, yeah, wow. You know, I have a feeling one day we'll be really surprised if we get the right people in office at the stuff that starts coming out. But let's dig into this a little bit, because I know I've been paying attention to the hemp industry for a while. And even with my disease, I have to use some controversial medications. Like for pain, I use topical ketamine. And when I tell people that, they're like, oh my God, you're on ketamine. And I'm like, yeah. And you're going to school just sitting there tripping, driving around? No, you've got the wrong idea. But it's funny to get that reaction out of them. You know, we had talked a little bit about SB3, and I'm real curious. This is kind of going to be a two-part question. So first of all, is there something going on behind closed doors that Texans are not being told?
It's politics. There's always stuff happening behind closed doors, especially when you see a bill that's this controversial. It's guaranteed to happen. Now, what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of smoke and mirrors right now. You're seeing stuff getting blamed on, oh, it's Dan Patrick is getting this type of buyout. He's getting paid off by this group. That's just superficial. And when you dive deep into it, it's not so nice. So I'm just going to give a little bit of a surface answer because I don't want to go too deep into it because it can get dangerous.
Yeah, there's some legalities there too. So,
I'm not talking about legality.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not talking about legality here.
When you
mess with people's money, it's be careful. But looking at the employee retirement system of Texas, follow the money trail and see what their investments are and what was set to happen. That's all I'm going to say on that one. There's a major conflict of interest that exists. So they're making bills that benefit their retirement. That's why we're on the big pushes.
Is it safe to say that their Texans are getting kind of sold out somehow with these bit with this type of bill?
Oh yeah, 100%. This isn't about the people. This is about payouts for people, donations, lobbyists getting paid by people, and unfortunately, yeah, we're getting the shaft of it. And it dates back to a lot of stuff that's going on. But we are being sold out. It's not about the people. It's about the powerful and profits. That's really what it comes down to right now. So it's a scary and slippery slope to what is truly going on.
You think we're dealing with legislative cronyism?
Oh yeah. It's like you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and people's will getting pushed because of that. And we saw manipulative tactics. There was an individual in a House of Representatives here in Texas who went on record and said that the lieutenant governor was pushing his will and had made a threat behind closed doors to say, if y'all don't pass this in th with the original legislation, we are going to hold up all the bills in the Senate that have come from the House. So that's why we saw a massive reversal on SB3, because the House listened to the hundreds of testimonies that happened. I was one of those. To the hundreds of people who testified against it. And every survey, every poll that went for this was against SB3. And the House listened to have amendments for more regulation, but also releasing control of certain aspects. And then Dan Patrick said, no, I want it back to the original language, a full and complete ban, like prohibition ban. So this isn't something that I'm coming up with. I saw this from a representative today.
Wow.
Like, this is something that was new.
Interesting. I've definitely been watching Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick go online and post how upset he is and talk about Abbott wants weed in Texas and all this stuff. And I'm just kind of like, I think you're from a generation that, and I'm not saying, I endorse drugs or anything, but it seems like he's from a generation that is out of touch with the younger generation that drives America and Texas today. Because, then you get into the hemp industry. That's a huge industry. And then you have the medical side. I've seen a lot of veterans benefiting from stuff. But again, I'm not involved in the research, so I can't really attest to any of that. I want to ask, since it does feel like there's kind of a battle between conservatives and establishment insiders, if you were to win and take office, do you have any ideas or would you be afraid to go after corruption in Austin at the Capitol?
There's always a sense of concern that you have to have when dealing with it because it's so entrenched. People have been doing this for decades. And yeah, there is some concern, but it's also to use it with the tact, not to go in like a bull in a china shop, but more like a surgeon to start, okay, exposing and understanding what is going on. Because we have an idea from the outside, but you don't fully know what's going on until you pop up on that door, until you start getting in there and fully seeing it firsthand. And that is going to take precision, not strikes, but precision cuts to see, okay, what is happening? What's going on? How do we cut? And understanding these ins and outs. And we have to be willing to do whatever possible because it's not about we. It's not about me. It's about we, the people. And elected officials are supposed to have the back of the people, not the powerful, not the donors and the elite. It was for supposed to be the people. And we have to get more elected officials to say, you know what? Whatever you do to me, go for it. I'm serving the people. I believe truly the people will protect, the people will stand up when they see it. And I pray every day and say, you know what? God protect me. I'm set on this path for a reason. I was like, I pray to God, and like, you know what? Keep me safe. Let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and let your kingdom come. It's your will, not my will. And if this is your will, God, you will protect me. You will keep me safe. I was like, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I will fear no man. And the only person I have to look up to and be concerned with is between me and God. If I'm doing right by him, then I'm doing right by the people. And whatever happens, I leave that to God's hands.
Before we go to this next topic, exactly everything you're saying leads us right into keep defending faith and keeping God in Texas. Is there anything you would like Texans to know about SB3 before we move on?
Keep asking the tough questions. Keep showing up, and that it is beneficial. And keep asking the questions of why are they killing this bill? Why do they want it hidden? And then the additional question, once you ask that, is who is set to profit on this? And what's happening? This is a long trail to look into, but you start asking these questions and you start uncovering the truth. They will hide, and the truth will set you free. And when the people start to see this and they understand, they're going to be willing to push back harder. And then once you wake up and discover it, share it with people. The more this information gets out there, the more we spread what is going on, and we start shining the lights on the cockroaches and their behaviors, they are going to flee. But we have to keep shining more and more light so there is nowhere for them to hide. Because if we don't, if even one person stops shining their light and exposing, they'll find that place to harbor. So we have to collectively wake up, ask the questions, and not be afraid of the intimidation.
All right, now let's get back to talking about this. Defending faith and keeping God in Texas. There's a growing feeling that God is being pushed out of public life in Texas. What are some signs you're seeing, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, for a while, we were seeing the God being taken out of the Pledge of Allegiance, not just in Texas, but throughout the country. And prayers were getting removed out of schools. I remember being in elementary school, and we had to say a prayer before we started. And that was just the norm. But we've seen this erosion, and a Christianity has been watered down a lot lately. And it's supposed to be preaching tolerance, but Jesus did not like tolerance. He's like, no, we're not for being tolerant, because tolerant is watching something bad happen or a bad behavior occur and doing nothing about it. That's tolerance. You're tolerating something. And we've seen that erosion in our morals and our mentality. And people have, I've heard, I actually got into an argument with someone this past week who said God is, was not the foundation of the founding fathers of America. And to that one, the answer is wrong. And the answer to that is no, the Bible was the document in the book that the US Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, was written from. They use it as heavily referenced. And the first line of the Declaration of Independence was a prayer. It was a prayer to God. That was the first opening line. And out of the 13 original colonies or states, 12 out of the 13 took oaths of faith. And the another one who also he did sign, but it was for a different type of Christian religion, different type of Christianity. But they all had forms and oaths of faith, affirming to God as the foundation. This is what we are, how we are founded. And we have been slowly eroded to say God is not the principle, God is not the powerful. And the question I have to people is, why is that erosion happening? We have countries throughout the world who have Islam, Hinduism, Judaism, but yet it's bad if you want to be a Christian. Like, our principles were godly and were on Christianity, and yet you want to remove that. And we are seeing lawlessness and insanity happen right now. Growing up, I never would have thought I was going to have to safeguard and heavily watch what was on TV for my kids. Now, we're not watching new stuff. Most of the things that we watch, especially what we let our kids watch, are old shows and movies prior to 2000. Because we started to see in the 2000s a major shift of wokeness and putting different ideology that is lewd behavior that should never be allowed on TV, let alone in kids' programming or advertisements, ever. And we're seeing this slip of morality happen. And as the morality slips, we start seeing more lawlessness. We are seeing more laws and being put in place. And it was one of the major beliefs of our founding fathers that the less rules were better, and that the more rules and regulations that we had in place that the government had to do was going to be a decline of a good and moral society. That's what we see in Article 5 of the Constitution about having the Convention of States or having a constitutional convention. It was based on a good and moral society. And we are seeing that slip away today. So we have to get back to our Christian roots of who we were as a people. Now, I'm not saying that we need to go on the hunt for other people, other religions. I'm not saying that at all. Christianity preaches to love thy neighbor, to love one another. But when people start coming against our foundations and we're giving in, that's a problem. Kevin, Caleb, if someone were to bang on your front door right now and say, hey, we're going to come into your house and we want your TV, you're going to look at them and say, no, I'm not going to let you do that. But now those type of people are saying, oh, but I deserve this. You have this and I don't. I deserve the TV. It says to be tolerant. You should love that neighbor. You should give what you have. They're twisting scripture and to manipulate people for their own agendas. And then the Christians say, you know what? Okay, the Bible does say that. I don't want confrontation. It says turn the other cheek. And then we get taken advantage of. We have to start pushing back and say, these are my beliefs. This is what I believe. And you are not going to take that from me. If a Christian goes into a Muslim country and tries the same things, they will get thrown, they will get stoned, they will get hurt. But yet those people are coming here and they're pushing their agendas. Just here, this legislative session, there was a building or a compound that was supposed to be happening around Dallas-Fort Worth area, and it was a Muslim community. Now, what people don't realize with that community was they were trying to surpass Texas and state and federal law. They wanted to have Sharia law put into place in their compound and in this area that no other law mattered except their law, Sharia law. And that's a problem. And some of these groups have called for the takedown of America, have called for the destabilization of our country and our morals, and that their religion to surpass America. This is not something I'm making up. This is what you're seeing on the world stage happening. And those people are coming here and now they're pushing against us. And Christians are saying, hey, you know what? Turn the other cheek. We're not a people of war. We don't want war. But war is knocking at our door, whether it be in the political, in our homes. And we're on the global landscape, there is a fight and a calling that's happening. I pray it never actually has to go to arms, to where we have to pick up arms and defend. But we have to start saying, these are my beliefs, these are my morals, and I am not going to bend about it. No matter how loud, how obnoxious, or what you do, I am not going to bend. And we have to remain strong. So that's what I mean by putting faith, family, and freedom back into Texas.
You know, I feel like Ronald Reagan said it best. If we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. It basically speaks for itself. without God, we become corrupt. And with Trump and his administration, we're finally seeing a lot of Christianity coming back to America, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I completely agree. In my opinion, we took a lot of steps backwards under the previous administration, and Trump has really helped us a double step going forward and steered us in the right direction. But I do think that we're going to need continuous leadership with faith-based principles, conservative principles, Republican values, or we could find ourselves in a whole other situation like we were under the Biden-Harris administration all over again. You know, everything was getting beyond expensive. Everything, in my opinion, started getting really, really weird. I don't care where you went. Those 4 years were pretty weird. It really sounds like you have a plan to keep God in Texas and faith in government. Do you have any advice on equipping the next generation to defend keeping God in Texas and defending their faith boldly?
First thing to do with defending the faith is to study, read the Bible, and to pray. That's the first thing. Because the enemy knows scripture. The enemy will take and use scripture against us. And if we're not solid, we're not certain on it, we can fall into the trap. Even Jesus was tested in the wilderness, and he knew the word, and he challenged the enemy. He challenged Satan with the word that was written, the word of God. So the first thing is to study and understand the Bible, pray, and seek his understanding. And then to also get physically ready. When I say physically ready, I mean change up your eating habits to where you're not eating the chemicals and the crap, the garbage that's in it. Because a lot of our stuff that we have, it's designed to make us sick. If you look at the labels on most foods, it is not healthy. It is horrible for us. And start breaking those addictions of food, of alcohol, of adult material, to start getting yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally right. Because if we aren't right in all these categories, we can easily be subdued in any one of them. It's like a pillar. You have to have all the pillars in place, because if one goes, you lose your load bearing. And now it creates the greater chance for a failure and for a fall. And right now our foundations are crumbling. They want the younger generation weak. They want us to be confused and not paying attention. That's why we see a lot of strife and fighting, like amongst the parties. Even right now, we're seeing a fight within the Republican Party. My belief is it's a distraction. It's to get people looking in one direction and to fracture the party so something else or someone else can come in. So it's waking up and looking multiple levels beyond what the media says, what the politicians say. Look five levels deep. Ask, why is this happening? Why are they doing this? Question everything. Trust, but verify.
You know, you're talking about foundation and pillars. And if you're going to have foundation and pillars, you got to have infrastructure for future generations. And Texans worry a lot about blackouts, water shortages, aging roads, airports, and other things. Do you have a plan for infrastructure if you're elected?
Yeah, I'm working on a plan with multiple groups statewide, because you're right, our power is failing at egregious rates. We should never have to experience a major power failure that we have. Like Winter Storm Uri, that was a major failure. And that some of our politicians even went so far as to not be here. They knew it was coming. They're like, all right, we're going to get out. Like, no. But we have to start looking at alternatives. One of the things for the water that we're currently exploring is using what's called reverse osmosis to take seawater and turn that into potable water. We can take fracking water, clean it up, and reuse it for crops, or I don't want to use it for drinking water, but you can still clean it up. There's ways and there's processes around it. The thing is, they're costly. It has money to it, but it's a benefit to do that versus the antiquated methods. Are y'all familiar with the Marvin Nichols Reservoir?
And
No, not so much that one.
okay. So the way that for the longest time in here in Texas, the way we have solved water issues was we would create these reservoirs. So we would seize or they'd purchase like use eminent domain to purchase large amounts of land to create these lakes and reservoirs. Well, that worked in the past, but people have made it as a recreational use, which is not bad, but people have created businesses and livelihoods around that. And the Marvin Nichols Reservoir up around Dallas, they're looking to do the exact same. They're looking at taking thousands of acres of land to make it a reservoir for the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But the crazy part with that water is the DFW lakes, they're all deemed recreational and they're at over capacity right now. So all the lakes that were up and rivers that are up there, they've been getting such mass flooding that they're all over capacity. But they don't want to pull water from that. Instead, they want to go a little down the way and to create this reservoir and for their water use. So they're going to take thousands of acres from Texans that have been in family for generations to now, hey, we're going to use this as a waterway or for water for up in the DFW when they have plenty of water. Here in the South, like South Texas, like we have reservoirs for that purpose. And yes, most of them are low because we're in a drought. But yet up north, they're all filled up and they're overfull. So, okay, when we have an overcapacity in one region, let's have a system in place where we can take that water and pump it to places that need it. And then to create a way to take seawater and to use it where in regions that they may not get as much rain. There's unique solutions that we can do, we know how to do, but we're not doing it. So we have to start thinking outside of the box to solve these issues, not the way we've been doing them, but how we're going to do them 50 to 100 years from now. We had to have this long-term vision. And that's one of the things that I'm working on right now with people is to create a plan for infrastructure for the next 50 to 100 years at least. Because the state of Texas is set to double its population in the next 20 years. If we're set to double and we can't keep up with what we have today, there's a problem. So we can't do the same thing we've been doing for the past 100 years. We have to do something new and unique. And we have the technology to do this. We just got to do it.
We've definitely had some ideas in the Tech College Republicans. At one point, we had almost an 8-hour discussion just on education and water sustainability. And we came up with some ideas. We don't know if, anyone will go for some of our ideas. And one of them was dealing with salt water there and pipelining it. Of course, you wouldn't just do normal salt water. We'd have to do stuff to it. But you've often heard, the reason nobody is desalinating the ocean is there's no money in it. You'd have to create the money for it. And to do that, you got to create a need. Well, we've got a lot of reservoirs that need attention. We've got a lot of low lakes and rivers, even though DFW is a different case compared to what we have here. But we experience that too in the West. And, some of our engineering students are of the opinion, if you got the right people together and you did invest the money into it, and I know Senator Perry, he just passed a bill that will allow us to address water problems in the future. I haven't read through it. I was following other bills and I just haven't had time to look at it. But that's definitely one of them because we've seen in Texas history a lot of towns that died because there was no sustainability, there was no infrastructure. They had a one-point plan and it killed them. And a lot of times, government and stuff does get involved in that, but sometimes they're a little too involved. So, do you believe Texas should become less dependent on federal oversight when it comes to energy and transportation systems?
I believe Texas needs to prepare for itself. And I say that because right now we have gotten into the federal federal government's pocket. It was initially designed to where the states had a lot of power. They didn't need the federal government to exist to meet needs. Now we do. Now we're overly reliant on them. And Texas is one of the only, if not the only state, that has its own power grid, that we are separate from the main grid. And we need to continue to keep pushing towards that, but also update it. Because if we're dependent on the federal government, what happens if we decide to, at one point, the Texas people say, you know what? Enough's enough from the feds. Let's be our own country. Let's go back to being our own republic. What happens then? We're not ready for that. There's a group with the Texas National Movement. They call it Texit as well. And we are nowhere close to that. We have to stop being dependent on the federal government and start looking after our own, securing our own water, power, other infrastructure, and trade routes. We have to secure this and look ahead. And the more dependent that we are on the federal government for help, the more problematic we are. Because the federal government takes forever to react to stuff. For here, if we're local, you can move faster than the federal government will. So that's what we have to do. We have to start looking after ourselves first and put Texas first. And then we can look to the United States. Then we can branch out. But we have to start securing us our own house first.
Are there any specific upgrades? I take it water's one of them, but besides that, that you're most passionate about in regards to tackling if you're elected?
So the power grid is a big part, and that's pushing more for nuclear energy and the next generation of reactors. The theories are out there. They have the ideas and the plans, but the costs are pretty egregious right now. I want to say the last part that I was hearing was about $80 billion to create the new type of reactor that we need, and nobody wants to push it. But it's also because of the federal and state regulations. It makes it extremely expensive to do so. It's not cheap to do nuclear. If we were to bring the nuclear pricing down through most of the regulations, we could get these new reactors in for a fraction of the price. I was talking with someone that's like, yeah, we can create these new generation reactors for about 20 to 40 billion, not the 70 to 80 that's currently being quoted. We can get it down substantially. And these new reactors are more efficient, and they can use up some of the old reserves. So when some of the uranium gets used in the old reactors, this new generation can use them and deplete it even further. So they're more efficient, they can go better, and it's cleaner. The footprint for wind and solar is a lot bigger than what nuclear has. Nuclear is it's a much smaller facility. It can produce 24 hours a day. And there's enough regulations on it and infrastructure to where it's not as dangerous as we thought it as once was.
Do you mind if I ask you something? Because you talked about the wind energy thing real quick. I just want to see if it's a thing out there. It's a thing here that we see, and so I'm real curious. You talk about the footprint. You can drive around West Texas. I don't care what they tell you or what's in the news. I don't trust the news anyway. They talk about how it's clean and it's green. My God, if you just drive right off the Cap Rock, go down to Post, Texas, even. You can see those windmills leaking oil everywhere, just constantly. And it's ruining the farmland, it's ruining the ranch land. I just wanted to see if that's a thing y'all experience in your part of Texas.
Yeah, we see a lot of these wind and solar farms coming up, and I don't like them because they're taking farmland. Here in Texas, we lose six farms a day. That's not sustainable. So they're taking these solar panels, they're putting it on farmland, they're putting the wind turbines, and they can't produce all the time. That's the other issue. And then the only reason that they are profitable is because of government subsidies. That is it. They don't make money out of it regularly. I was at an event in the past month where an individual was talking about this. This is what he does for a living. And He was saying that for the cost per hour is extremely, it's a lot more expensive than it is for wind and solar than it is for gas and nuclear. Gas, coal, and nuclear energy. And that is why we're seeing the energy prices rise so dramatically, is because under the previous administration, they put mandates in place that the power companies had to have a certain number of watt hours produced by wind and solar. That being said, I want to say it was like $70 per watt hour for, or kilowatt hour that was produced, like per for solar and wind, and it was maybe like a couple of bucks, like for less than $5 for nuclear, coal, and natural gas. Don't quote me on those exact numbers, because, but it was something like that. It was a major disparity, and that's a problem. So when it costs so much money to produce 1 hour of, or what, 1 watt of energy versus another option that's cheaper, takes less of a footprint, and can produce 24 hours a day, that's not sustainable. We're told it's green, but it's really not. Because it does more harm than good to the environment, like you said.
Is there a location in Texas where they would put such a nuclear plant or have looked at doing it?
We have nuclear plants, I believe, in Texas. I know that, I think there's one around the Corpus Christi area. But right now, the big push is for the mini reactors. Are you
Okay.
familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
So mini reactors are facilities that they're, or machines that they can attach to large commercial facilities like Amazon warehouses or production, and they can produce a good amount of electricity, and they're safe. So that's something that's being talked about right now and being enacted.
Interesting. That is completely different from the stuff that we really get to even hear up in West Texas. That's interesting.
And I know this one because I'm a part of like the Greater San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, and I'm also part of like the Economic Development Council, Public Policy, and other different councils. And we were talking with one of the group CPS Energy about that, and like, yeah, we there are we they do have investments with nuclear power, and they are well aware of the mini reactors that are coming in. And because it's like for San Antonio's at a power deficit. Our energy company can't keep up, and they said that. They know it. Like during main demand, like large situations, they can't keep up. Nuclear facilities, if they're well maintained, even in a winter storm or a major heat wave, they're still operational. They're protected. But it's starting to say, hey, look, let's get away from the wind and solar. Let's start doing more of the nuclear.
Yeah, I can definitely see where it's like, all right, this was a good idea in theory, but it's kind of crap. We need to get together and solve this problem with some actual power at this point, or people are going to start suffering here pretty soon. We're going to go ahead and go into our last topic here, securing Texas sovereignty at the border. And I remember at one point you said Texas must be defended like any veteran or first responder would. What would that kind of leadership look like at the border, in your opinion?
Well, we need to treat the border as a demilitarized zone to where we are protecting our interest. Whether it's if the state, if the federal doesn't do it, we need to do it ourselves. Because throughout the world, we see countries who stop people immigration from coming over. We stop invasions. We have a demilitarized zone that the United States government and our military, we're good at doing, but yet we don't do it here. We allow a lot of people to come over. And we have to control who comes in. We need to have a clear vetting process and to start putting up that zone of like, hey, look, this is a DMZ. You're not going to cross here without a permit. You're not going to cross here without authority. There are certain checkpoints we get in and out of, because what we've seen is we've seen bad actors come in throughout the state and cause major issues. And that's not okay. And when I say about have like any veteran or first responder should, like, or any Texans should. Texans who served in the military, we took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. That means, hey, we need to stand up. If the federal government or even our state government is not doing the job, we need to step up. If we identify, hey, there's human trafficking going on, we need to step up and intervene because we can do it faster. Here's a good example. If right now your house catches on fire or a neighbor's house catches on fire, you place that 911 call. By the time you notice that incident and you place that call, it's going to be anywhere between 5 and 15 minutes before the first fire truck will show up. Now, if you have a fire extinguisher, a garden hose, you can pull somebody out. You can maybe put that fire out before they'll even show up. And at the very least, you can control it and mitigate it until the proper people can come in and back you up and take over. But that's what I mean is we need to have civilians, the veterans, the Texans say, go back to the mentality of see something, say something, and stop it. Because if we don't, we're complicit to crimes. We're just saying, hey, let it happen. But we can't do that anymore. Because that's how we're seeing these bad things happen to citizens. And it's not every illegal. There's bad actors in every group. But we need to start saying, if the federal government and the state government are refusing to take action, then we need to empower the citizens to protect and defend Texas and that border. Because there were farmers who are having their houses and their farms invaded and people were getting hurt. The farmers were getting hurt because of it. There was one instance where a farmer ended up getting sued because an illegal got hurt on their property. That's not the protection that we have as Texans. That's not okay. So that's what I mean by having the veterans and Texans say, look, we're going to defend, we're going to step up, and we're going to be in that gap until the state and the federal can take over and assist. But right now, we're getting chastised by doing so.
Do you have a message for law enforcement, National Guard, or just Texans in general who feel the system is trying to tie their hands regarding border security and addressing sex trafficking?
It goes back to see something, say something, and speak up. And never stop speaking up. It's always being loud and not wavering, because the tactics that are being used are bullying tactics. It's, oh, sit down, shut up, stay to the side, don't intervene, don't do this, leave it to the proper authorities. But by the time the proper authorities can get there, it's already too late. Those people are gone. The crime is already committed. But it's, don't be afraid of the government. Don't be afraid of the people coming after and doing the harm. Do what's right, speak up, stand up, and hold that ground. Because the more of us who hold the ground and who are bold and are pushing forward, the more people are going to rally behind it. You might think no one's watching or paying attention. People are, and they're looking for individuals like us to speak up and to start holding that ground. And then we're going to have a bigger movement. Then they're going to flock to it, and you'll have that backup that you need.
I feel like James O'Keefe said it best. The documentary that he made, he went and interviewed and even went across the border into Mexico just to find out what it was like trying to get over as an illegal alien. And he had a lot to say because of the... We went to an event a while back that was pretty amazing, and he was the guest speaker. Just the documentary that we watched, or the clips that we watched, the people who decided to stand up said, this is where I draw the line in the sand. And that's the name of his documentary, The Line in the Sand. Sometimes we got to stand up for defending our country and our state and defending what we believe in.
Very well said.
All right. As we close this podcast session, we normally ask our guests, What advice do you have for young conservatives and Republicans to open up about their beliefs and start making a stand and overcoming their fears to open up a little bit more?
So going back to the Bible, look at the examples that the disciples did. All the disciples, except for one, died in horrible ways. They spoke up against evil. They spoke the truth. No matter the cost, they were not afraid. So we need to look to the disciples and the teachings of Jesus and embrace those and say, you know what? I am not afraid of the gospel. I am not afraid of Jesus Christ, and that our God is not dead. He is fully alive and he's risen. And he's inside of us, and that we need to hold to those truths and to say, even in the midst of the storm, God has got me. It might be crazy all around, but I can look up and see him, and that's going to be the guide. And to seek, but to not be afraid, not be ashamed of your faith, not be afraid of what people are going to do, because they will come after, they will get loud. And you have to be able to be that rock, to stand firm and strong and say, you know what? This is where I'm going to draw the line. This is where I plant my flag. This is my belief, and you're not going to come and take it.
Very well said.
Whenever I first decided to start politically becoming an activist, I first watched one of Trump's videos that he had done at a graduation ceremony, and somebody had made an edit out of that speech, and it was just empowering to basically say, stand up for what you believe in, and everything that you want to do, do it. And I'm going to play it really quick, and then we'll get out of here.
If I give you one message to hold in your hearts today, it's this: treat the word impossible as nothing more than motivation. Relish the opportunity to be an outsider, because it's the outsiders who change the world and who make a real and lasting difference. The more that a broken system tells you that you're wrong, the more certain you should be that you must keep pushing ahead. You must keep pushing forward.
And it was just an amazing speech, and I feel like he said it best, that outsiders do change the world, and that's exactly what we're doing with this podcast and what we're doing, spreading the word of God and trying to open up people's eyes to say, this is what's going on in the world, and you can either stand up for it or you can just sit back and watch.
Yeah, and I really hope that we're able to educate and get younger conservatives and Republicans involved, because that's what we need. We need people that are going to take action. If we don't take action, we're just making noise, and that's not going to accomplish anything. And so that's one of our goals, is to inspire next-gen Republicans and conservatives to take action. Don't be afraid to get in the game young. We need younger ideas. We need people from different backgrounds that want to get in, get their hands dirty, go to work, and save this state and this country and continue defending it. So thank you once again for coming on. It was an honor to finally get to meet you and get to actually hear you talk. I've never got to actually hear you talk. I've wanted to see what you're about, but I'm always busy doing other things. And so now I know. Now I completely get it, and I agree with what you're saying.
Well, it was great to talk with you, Kevin and Caleb. We had never talked before, so it was good talking with you as well.
Thank you most definitely for being a part of this podcast, and we definitely hope to have you on eventually back soon.
Just let me know when.